Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 123, being recorded on the 13th of April, 2016. I'm Sujit, and on Skype with me, I have Kale and Evan. Guys, first question I'm going to ask you is, have you filed your taxes yet?
Absolutely, and I'm dreading the money coming out of my account.
Oh, yeah. Mine's already gone. I think it took like less than a day, it seemed like, before the money was gone.
Yeah, I'm still regretting. So this year my daughter, right? She got a job. She actually got two jobs, which is great. She's becoming more and more independent and responsible. Apparently the limit is $4,000. If you exceed $4,000, you can't be claimed as a dependent, right? Mm-hmm. She made $4,200, oh, and it cost me $1,300 in taxes.
Wow. that's good information. I got to note that down for when my son becomes old enough to get a job.
Make him show you his pay stub so you can keep up with that.
That's right. That's funny. But, I was just thinking about the scale at which the taxes, the income tax filing and all work now. Everything's kind of in the cloud now, right? It seems like all these services that seems to be cloud-based for filing your taxes, collecting, like they have the online, right? The online tax collection,
returns.
E-file. Yeah, and some of them are doing it for free. I sometimes wonder how they make money on those things. But, it's amazing how the cloud has just made it possible for all these services to be offered to people. And it's great. My mom filled her taxes and she did it online for free, and she was quite happy. Mm-hmm. She didn't have to fill out any paperwork. I guess that's the way it's going. And conversely, it's all the money flows electronically now. They don't even want to deal with checks anymore.
Yep. So. Yeah. I think the thing that I mean, if you think about it, the tax season is one of the two classic scenarios that not just like the submittal process, but the actual underlying infrastructure, right? I mean, like I have no idea how many, servers the Treasury actually has or how many servers, some of these other companies that do the tax solutions online have. But I mean, whatever they're using, I guarantee you the last couple of weeks and probably the couple of weeks after for the laggards, right, they're using it, basically throwing as many servers at that as they can. And then come, May 1st, they're going to need half the servers, right? And cloud is absolutely built for that.
Just perfect. I can imagine what it's going to be like, midnight, right? When is it normally the filing deadline?
Well, it's actually Monday,
on the 18th,
isn't it?
Right.
Yeah, it's Monday this year, technically, because I guess today's a holiday in D.C., so it's treated as the taxes can't be due.
Correct. So it's going to be Monday night. I can imagine the server load or the number of servers scaled up at that time.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal. Before we go anywhere, Evan, I believe you have a boot camp you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, so I wanted to put out an open invitation to anybody that is within driving distance of Charlotte, North Carolina. This Saturday from 9 to about 5 or so, we're doing an Azure boot camp and we'll put the link in the show notes, but we're going to be talking about IaaS, we're going to be talking about PaaS, we're going to be talking about IoT, basically a whole bunch of different Azure things. We're going to have some folks running some labs, it should be a really good time. We've got almost 100 people registered at this point, so far we got a pretty good turnout, but the more the merrier, and invite everybody who can get here to come hang out with us.
Now, is this normally held at the Microsoft office?
So this is at the local Microsoft office in Charlotte, mm-hmm. And the exact address will be on in the show notes for folks.
Great, excellent. All right, so we'll put that in the show notes, and let's see, what have we got, Kale? You put some updates in the show notes. Anything in particular you want to start with?
Put a couple out here. The first one's the document DB. So something that's continuing to grow in interest. And basically, we've announced some new things with document DB, specifically around pricing again. Seems like we're always, you know, kind of whittling the price down for document DB, which is awesome for users. But in this case, it's slightly different. So there's basically this new way to do what's called user-defined performance for your collections. So we used to have a model where we had different SKUs, typically, you know, like the S1, S2, S3, and they had different request units associated with them, which is basically like how much you can hit those per second. So 250, 1,000, and 2,500 were the standards before for a single collection. But now they got this model where you can switch to, it's called the standard pricing model. And in that one, you basically choose your throughput level between 400 and 10,000 request units. And so this is kind of cool. So if you already have something running up there, you don't have to destroy it. You can basically just go in and say, yeah, I want to try this new pricing model. And in a lot of cases, and they lay one out here in this blog post we can send around, but they basically lay out a typical scenario. If you had like an S1 with like 10 gig of storage, which you know, basically has 250 request unit per second throughput, it costs about $25 a month. If you just moved that to a standard and did nothing else, you're going to get 400 request units per second for the same price. So, you know, it's something to look at if you're using DocumentDB. And the cool thing is you can kind of move to this new pricing model and try it and see how it kind of works for you. And you can actually switch back, so you're not locked to a pricing model there. So kind of interesting. And they have some new thing called partition collections. They haven't had a chance to play with yet. But basically, these are for people who, you know, basically in your collection, you know, I mentioned that 10,000 request units per second is the fastest. But you can think about sharding and some other things that we usually do with these types of NoSQL databases to make them scale. And the partition collection is exactly that. So you're able to actually, if you need to go beyond 10,000, you should take a look at the partition collection, which will allow you to kind of scale beyond that.
You know, one thing, I'll make a comment on the document DB. Did we know how other cloud vendors price the similar offerings? I mean, does AWS have an offering similar to DocumentDB?
I mean, there's a bunch of them on the market that are NoSQL, which is, I guess you could slot DocumentDB into, but they're all kind of, they have their own little unique feature sets.
Right.
So I don't know if there's a direct comparison. I don't know. Evan, do you know? Is there
I'm not sure for DocumentDB. I mean, I know when we talk about IaaS, for example, I'm not sure about Amazon's commitment relative to what Microsoft is doing price-wise, but I know, but we have said for years now, I guess, you know, 3 or 4 years now, if they drop their price, we'll meet it. And so that's in the IaaS space. So for, you know, kind of some of the core components there, it wouldn't surprise me if we've got, you know, if there is a head-to-head kind of similar offering, I suspect it's a similar approach.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason I ask is I've always been, you know, perplexed by the pricing model of DocumentDB. It, you know, it used to be very high, and then they came up with this developer edition, and now they have this other convoluted pricing model. I don't know. You like, it's like it's almost impossible to know what you're going to be paying, you know, when you use that service.
What do you think would be? I mean, you think something like a by the query or something is the right way to do it, or what would you?
Well, I mean,
what
they,
would you
know,
think
they,
would be more predictable?
Well, when they talk about these units and things like that, I mean, you know, I don't know how people quantify the work or the workload that they push into DocumentDB, but yeah, the query is like how does like SQL, right? I mean, DocumentDB is a database, correct, of some sort. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do we charge for SQL?
SQL is these days it's based on DTUs, which if you hadn't if you hadn't asked me to say it, I could tell you what it is.
Data is like what?
See, this is
that's
exactly
not
what
helpful.
I'm talking about.
See, now you know.
Yeah, no, yeah, you proved your point, but basically the DTU is it's a unit of transactions that you can run in in X amount of time, and so that way you can kind of scale up. But you're right; it is difficult to say my workload on premises is blah, right, and that translates to some DTU.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I just had a conversation today with someone about Event Hub, and we were talking through all the features and how we scale that, you know, and why it even exists, as opposed to something like a normal message queue. And the first question was asked, okay, so we have partitioning, and we can partition that one up to, I think, 32 partitions. And so it's like, well, why would I not just use 32? Because I'm not being charged for the partitions. And so then it kind of like, it goes back into my mindset as a developer. Whenever I'm building something, I usually say, okay, here's what I think the load's going to be. Mm-hmm. And then I'll usually go a little bit above that and say, this is what I think I need. And we'll start there. And then let's, you know, get it out there with beta or out to normal users and see, do we need to scale it up or not? I feel the same way with, like, with this stuff. It's like, yeah, I don't know what 10,000 request units. I'm not sure if my app's going to do that. So let's put it somewhere in the middle and then see what happens scale it.
I suppose that's the way to do it. Yeah, I just wish they came with a more predictable or simplified. It's kind of like our tax code, you know. It's so damn complicated.
Wow, full circle there.
He was planning that. Did you? No, I'm thinking he had this written down. So we're going to talk about scale, then we're going to talk about taxes, and then, yeah, no. There was a devious. And now you're going to keep the circle going, right? Because we're going to talk about scale again, right?
Yeah. Well, how about we break that cycle and talk about the bot framework? Kale put something on that in the show notes. And that's a really cool link in there. I was just reading up on it, Kale, how one of the program managers, Jeff Holland, he said he just in a very short amount of time, he used a whole bunch of Azure services to put together a very simple bot service, I suppose. That's the correct term for it, to where you could ask queries about some kind of a TFS workflow that he was that he works on. I mean, he pulled together like the bot framework API, which we briefly talked about, I think last week or the week before, and we definitely need to have somebody on the show to give us some more insight into that. But he took that and put together a web app, some logic apps, some machine learning, and then hooked it up with VSTS, you know, the team services, Visual Studio team services, to be able to query and ask all sorts of cool questions out of, you know, off his, I guess his work items and team services, so, and his source code control. So that's a nice way. He's given some breakdown on how you would do that, and we'll put that in the show notes. That's definitely a good weekend project right there.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I have to get my head wrapped around it, but it feels like I should be thinking about how to design things that I've done in the past using this kind of framework.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that I guess the bot, one thing I have kind of yet to understand is like, is it the intention that we, each one of us, builds a bot for our own personal use, or do you build something that is more general purpose? I guess that's what he's built, something that's good for him, I suppose. I wonder if that's like, what's the overall purpose of the bot framework? Is it to build?
Well, I mean, I think my take on the bot stuff is that really it comes down to, there's all kinds of, you know, again, in my world, in the support world, right? There's all kinds of standard questions that get asked over and over and over. The problem is, and this is where I think the bot framework brings in, is the ability to translate a natural speech question into something that the application can understand what it's supposed to go do.
Mm.
Right. And that's what I think the bot framework brings that. I mean, the machine learning part is kind of a, you know, it's how it gets better at it and increases its ability to do things. But it's really the ability to say, you know, hey, how do I install Windows, you know, in my world? You know, I mean, people are going to ask that question a million different ways, but at the end of the day, you're still kind of come back to the same content. The bot framework allows you to do that. At least that's my perception, and again, right. I need to go play with it, but that's kind of how I see it.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys saw in the news this week that, I don't know if it's like a conference they have, but Facebook had some sort of conference or something, and they announced their bot. I don't know if it's a framework or what it is, but it's something like that too. Yeah,
they totally copied us on that. That was timing on that was really, really suspicious.
Yeah, I
saw that. But Kale, there's an item in here that right down your alley, blockchains.
Yeah, we had some updates. I there's one out there from Marley again, talking about, you know, industry relevance and some of the features of blockchain, just trying to spread the word a bit more. And we also got a kind of a first class entry point now. So when you go up to azure.com, we actually have a section just for blockchain now, which has, you know, links out to more information about it, like we talked about before, as well as some links out to the stuff we've been building and some of the images that are available out there in the marketplace, and to help you get started with that.
You know, we got to get Marley Gray on this podcast. I know him. I know him from before. He used to be. He used to work in the financial services group with me. Back in the day, and yeah, and obviously you've worked with him, or do you, have you?
Yeah, we're in close contact. We talk at least once a week.
good. So yeah, we should get him on. He's a good person to have. What else, Evan? Anything in here you like in the new items?
I think I'm kind of recovering from Build.
Yeah, all the news that came out.
Yeah, it's kind of this overload. So I'm still trying to process everything, I think, and get my head wrapped around what I like and what I want to go play with. There's just not enough time.
Oh, yeah, I noticed one thing. I don't know if you guys saw this. I'm sure you did if you were into Portal. I didn't notice this, like, in the Build stuff, and I don't know if we talked about it, because if I did, it totally slipped past me. Mm-hmm. But I was in a portal, you know, a little bit after Build, I saw, like, now in the dashboard, you can actually save dashboards. So, like, when you come in to...
You can save the dashboard, is that what you said?
Yeah.
So, like, so basically build a dashboard layout and then say I have dashboard A and dashboard B?
Exactly. Yeah, you could say, like, this is my data dashboard, and it has all your database stuff or whatever, and then you can, like, switch between them. And you can actually share them, too.
Nice.
Really? No, I did not know that. I guess that's going down the path of, like, you could sell a solution, and then with the solution you would have a dashboard for that solution.
Yeah. I was thinking about it, like, from ops perspective, because when... Yeah, I was working with customers before. They would have the same thing. Like, they have a group of guys who just do database stuff. They typically have, like, a database division or whatever. And they don't care about, you know, the network stuff or the VMs or any of that stuff. They just care about, you know, maybe storage and databases and these things. So it's kind of cool that you could build dashboards for each one. And then, actually, they're all available to you. So you could say if you were, like, an Uber admin or whatever, you could switch between them and kind of keep your sanity.
Nice. That's a good tip. Yeah. Excellent. Well, so we were kind of talking about what we discussed today on the podcast. We had some scheduling issues with our speaker that was previously supposed to come on today, and I kind of messed up on that, so we'll have that speaker on some other time. But a good topic we wanted to talk on was VM scale sets. Does that sound like a good topic to discuss today?
Yeah, no, I mean, especially, again, and we're not trying to make this a great big circle, but, I mean, it is, this kind of technology is really relevant to, you know, like we were talking about with the tax season, right? Somebody who is in that type of a business doesn't want to always have, you know, I don't know, 5,000 servers or, you know, whatever it is. I mean, they just want to have it when they need it.
So, I'm just trying to think of the history. So, historically, our IaaS service... we never had this concept of scale sets or scaling. We could scale the number of instances of an IaaS service, correct? In the past.
Let's step back a little bit further, right? So we started with the original platform as service offering, cloud services, right? Worker roles or web roles. You had this kind of specially designed way of deploying your code. And then now we could scale that out infinitely for you if you want it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the problem was you had to have this specially designed version of your code, right? And now if you're doing greenfield development, cloud services still are awesome, right? I mean, there's just tons of value to them if you're doing that. But if you have some on-premises app that it's already existing and it's coded, you know, you really don't want to have to rewrite it just to be able to leverage that. So but you're right, in the kind of first phases of IaaS, you'd have to build and create manually all these different copies of the server, and then you can, and I forget the exact terminology we use for those, but you can scale up and scale down, but you have to pre-create the IaaS VMs. you know, so it's not really super flexible, right, from that perspective.
Right. And I know there were a lot of issues in terms of having, I suppose, if you have the same code running in two different VMs, you know, sharing networks and things like that, a lot of that stuff comes into play, right? They can't have the same network name. You'd have to create these VMs with unique names of some sort, right? You use Sysprep and all these fancy tools to create these, to set up these VMs. And, of course, that's just a Windows world, right? We haven't even gone down the Linux world at this point.
And that was kind of the problem, right, is you have to manage all that.
Okay. So,
I think the big thing here, too, like before we get into what happened there, what happens now, like with these VM scale sets, is like if you look at where we came from, like back to what Evan was saying, the you know, service management API versus the ARM-based solutions we have now.
Right.
The old model really tightly coupled things, right? So it was like, you know, I had a VM and it was tightly coupled with a network. We didn't really have a concept of like an independent NIC kind of thing. And so, like, I think that very tight coupling between those things made it kind of difficult to be super flexible with like scaling and, you know, up and down, these kind of things. So they had to be like independent little units is the way I used to think of them. It's like, yeah, if you want to have five servers, let's go ahead and build them, and then we'll shut down X amount of them until you need them. But I think it's more dynamic now on with the new stuff.
So is it safe to say that the whole ARM architecture is enabled us to do a lot of this new stuff? Was that like the precursor to everything here?
I think they're tied together ultimately, right? ARM is about being able to declare what you want to do, and then the platform just replicates it as it needs to or implements it. So I think they definitely go hand in hand, because now you're templatizing that one VM and saying make, you know, X number of copies of it.
Right. Okay. So. So then let's move forward to this VM scale sets then. So we can use create an ARM template, right, to define a basic VM. Let's say we do that.
Yep.
And then you can have, I suppose you could also mix up maybe a front end VM and a middle tier VM and a database VM. Can you kind of combine them into these groups? Is that how it works? Or do they have to be identical?
Yeah, this is interesting, right? So, like, I don't know that I would mix roles, per se, just my experience with them. So if you think about, like, let's say your web app, right? So a bunch of web servers we have in there. When we roll those out, we create an image, right? Like you said, Sajit, we roll this thing out, and we have an ARM template declaring, like, what we want. And then, you know, at some point down the line, we're going to come along with another image, right, another gold image, and say, what do we do now? Do we have to bring the whole thing down? It's kind of cool that this thing actually supports different ways to kind of do that deployment. You can do it where it's like scorched earth kind of thing and say, yeah, let's just blow off the whole scale set. What's that?
Yeah, sorry.
And just take down and basically say, replace everything that's there with this now. And that's, for some people, maybe that's good. Maybe that's what they want. But for some people, they might say, no, let the ones that are running there, and then put this new image in there, and anything else, new ones that I spin up inside of there, let them use this new image. So I think it's kind of cool that it's flexible like that, that you can do kind of both models there.
Do you kind of version the images that way? Is that how it works?
You basically, in your scale set, you're going to define the image that you're using, right? So if you update that image, like, it's just a pointer out to a file, essentially.
I see. Yeah. So the new instances of that image now will pick up the new image mm-hmm. that you provide.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Yeah.
Got it. Sorry, Adam, you were saying something?
Yeah, I was just to say, I mean, as far as you were asking about, you know, how do you mix these front ends and back ends, is you're actually deploying these into a VNet, right? So you could theoretically take, you know, multiple sets of scale sets and get everything in the same VNet. Well, at that point, you have the, you know, VM to VM communication within the same VNet, right? So you could add, you know, you could definitely mix and match kind of, I guess, sets of scale sets to scale out whatever tiers you have to. Because at the end of the day, they're just VMs in a VNet.
Okay.
Yep. Right. So all that capability comes in there, and you can do load balancers, you know, in front of them, you know, so that you can truly get your, you know, I guess infinitely scalable, you know, HA. right? High availability.
So, okay, so from what I understand so far, so multiple VMs can be inside a scale set which sit inside a VNet, all right? So where does this concept of resource groups fit in then? So does this all fit into some sort of a group at that point?
I mean, resource groups is much more about the metadata, right, and kind of grouping things into this logical template.
Okay.
I don't think it has a direct correlation with scale sets, at least from my understanding and kind of what I've seen and playing with them just a little bit.
Okay, so resource groups is an overarching construct that can include scale sets and other things as well. Got it.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that the other thing, back to your point, Sajid, like when you spin these up, the other thing to keep in mind is with scale sets, you get the load balancer created automatically. Now, it doesn't automatically create to like port 80 or any of that stuff. I think what it does by default is the management port, like for, you know, for Linux it's SSH or Windows it's RDP, but it does create that load balancer out there for you. So you could basically just modify that and say, hey, this is my web tier, which is exposed through 443 or 80 or whatever, or this is my database. And, you know, you could use that load balancer. I don't know if you'd want to expose your database publicly, but you could create an internal one if you wanted to just have your different tiers talk.
Okay. Actually, you brought up a good point. We referred to it earlier, which is scale sets can include Linux images, right?
Absolutely. Windows. Yep.
So does that mean that there's some kind of special network driver now in these Linux images that, you know, knows how to deal with the scalable NIC that is offered in scale sets? They probably have to put, it's probably a fixed set of certified and Linux distros, you can use with that. I can imagine, Okay, so now let's talk about the scaling. That's sort of the key point with scale sets. Mm-hmm. So are we saying that once we set this up, we can just kind of scale up and down infinitely? And what exactly happens when we do scale up, you know? Does it start spinning up additional VMs like immediately, or is it done sequentially? I'm trying to understand like how quickly does this thing bump up or bump down?
Well, yeah. So this is, I don't know if you guys had ever done high instance count PaaS stuff, traditional, you know, cloud services. You know, once you got past a kind of a relatively small number of VMs, that became a very slow process, right? It might take 30, 40 minutes to get, you know, 100 instances up and running.
Wow.
And I think a lot of that came in from the implicit relationships between everything that you were talking about earlier. With the scale sets, this is all actually going on in parallel, right?
I see.
So now, there's probably a little bit of serialization in there, right? I mean, you can only add probably one VM to the VNet at the same time, but that doesn't mean you can't create the rest of the resources in parallel. Right. It's just when you actually put it into the VNet, you know, we probably have some limit that, you know, we're modifying the VNet 100 times, but yeah, the VMs are all up and provisioned and kind of there, right? So now you're not blocking on that part. You know, but yeah, and you can go up and down as you see fit. Now I do know the limit, and you know, we're saying infinite, and I kind of mean it a little bit in jest, but because today you are limited to no more than 100 VMs in a scale set.
I see.
Right. Okay. So, but that's a lot.
Yep. And as I said, you can have multiple scale sets too, right? In case you need to go higher, I suppose.
Yes.
And add more. Okay.
And from the scale perspective, the way I look at it, it's we can do both, right? So like if the typical thing is to scale out, right? So if we said we need more compute, just add more, which is kind of what you define in your ARM template. But in the ARM template too, we also define which one we're using, like which SKU of VM, like a D1 or a D3, being able to kind of modify that on the fly. So you kind of get the best of, I think, both worlds there from a scale out, scale up thing.
Right.
Yep.
And I suppose no discussion about scaling up and down is complete without talking about autoscale, right? And Kale, that's your favorite topic over there. So how does autoscale work with scale sets? Is that something that can be integrated?
Yeah, and it's the same. So if you think about where we kind of got to, again, back to the history with Wasabi and some of the early stuff we built, and then it kind of got integrated into the portal. Which basically has the scaler and all that stuff taken care for you. So it's going to it's a complicated thing, right, to scale up. You can't just like say, okay, well, we're going to scale on this metric of a CPU, and as soon as the CPU spikes above 90%, you start building more machines. Because typically, if you look at a computer, they have spikes, right? They'll go up to 90% for a second or a millisecond, and then bounce back down. So you need to have something in there like a governor to kind of, smooth that wave out, so that you're not just immediately reacting to a metric that maybe just needs to be smoothed out a little. And I think that's the magic that's kind of in the platform now with autoscale. So you just pick your metric, just like we've been doing for years, and you tie it to your VM scale set, and that's what will drive the up and down, or the, I guess, scaling out and scaling down of your scale set.
Nice, very nice. Now, when it comes to crafting these templates, I suppose we have to create these base templates, right? The ARM templates for the scale, I guess, for the VM, and then consequently for the scale sets. Is there like it sounds like there's some kind of is there Visual Studio support to like or, to help you create those? Because that those things can be pretty complicated from what I can imagine.
Yeah, I'm not sure if we've got direct Visual Studio for these yet. I know that I've been hearing a couple of folks on my team have been playing around with the Visual Studio support for ARM templates now, saying that it's really, really easy. So it wouldn't surprise me if it's not there today, that there's going to be some support for it in Visual Studio in the near future.
I think the other thing you can use now is, especially with like the scale sets, some of the stuff you have to do, especially the early stuff, like directly in ARM or PowerShell or something. But these have a thing in the portal where you can basically go set this up. But the cool thing now is, if I think it's only at the resource group level, but if you build one, so let's say you go build it through the GUI, you can go back into your resource group and export the template, and you can just pull that section out for your scale set, and there's your template without having to write code.
Nice. And how about the? I guess we always talk about in the past. Well, we'd have we were drilled about in our heads about update domains and fault domains, right? When it came to scaling up PaaS, because you wanted to make sure that it was on different nodes, I suppose, right? So if there was a complete node failure, you still had a couple of instances running at minimum, and you could recover onto another node. So is that something that's taken into account with the scale sets? Do they follow the same concept when it comes to fault and update domains?
Absolutely, right. I think that's all handled for you, right? The scale sets are update domain and fault domain aware, so that we're going to manage that underneath the platform for you, just so you don't even think about it, right? It just kind of comes with the package.
Nice.
I think the cool thing that kind of ties into that, what we were just talking about a minute ago, was, about updating your template, or maybe even your image. So the cool thing there is, neat, it will respect that in the update. So if you said, I want to put a new machine image out here, you go build your new machine image, put it in your template, you can actually run the update, and it will walk that stack, like we do in Azure.
Okay, cool.
Oh,
That's
so you get the rolling just by default as you're going through, you're saying Kale.
Yep.
Right. Okay.
All
Yeah,
right.
that's cool.
That's excellent. I think I just caught wind about a feature where you could I guess you could update the operating system, right, on your VMs. You could I think Kale you started saying that, right, where you could update the model and then push it out and then manually and then all the new instances would get switched to this new version of the image with the new patched up operating system or whatever changes you made. So that's wow, this just sounds like a real win-win. I mean this VM scale sets hard to imagine where there's a problem. The only one thing that I see lacking here, and you guys would have to keep me honest here, but you remember I talked about one time this concept of the gatekeeper pattern. So this is the pattern where you need to have one and only one VM active at any given time, but you need to have others on a call standby, right? And the moment the hot one went down, like the call one would immediately instantaneously take over, and it would continue working. It doesn't. Does that Is that something that is solved with this VM scale set? It's not apparent to me that it is.
Nah, this, I mean, as I, you know, from the playground that I've done, it looks like we're totally driven on load balanced concepts,
Right.
right? So your application needs to be able to live in that, multi-tenant, or not multi-tenant's not the right word, multi-instance world where any or all of the instances can get it at any one time.
Got it.
So they're all living kind of in parallel.
Okay. All right. Now this is good. Thanks, guys. Good discussion on a topic that was much overdue. VM scale sets. I guess we should all be using this from now on. So that's it for today, I suppose. Anybody, you guys have anything else you want
No, this
to
is a
talk
great
about?
conversation. As always, guys, it's been fun.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
All right,
Appreciate it.
then. We'll talk to you guys next week. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.